Well, what do we want to talk about today, guys?
God, anything but the Royals. God,
I would
just
rather talk about God than the Royals.
Yeah, this weekend was so frustrating.
You are entering the Royals Podcast Network. A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
Melted to left field. Billy comes through tonight. Splash.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
By the way, welcome to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I'm leaving that in. I'm Troy Olson. I am your host for one last time. We'll talk about that later. We'd definitely rather talk about that than the Royals, apparently. I'm joined by the voices of Michael Engel and Jeff Hur, who are very, very unhappy Royals fans right now. Guys, team's not playing too hot.
No, they're not. Really, this all falls upon the shoulders of us as fans for not being supportive enough in these trying times. I know that, you know, being a fan for 20-plus years and watching nearly every game and writing about them and doing pot, that's not enough. We got to step it up a little bit more, or else this team's never going to win.
Well, I said on Twitter today that I read the dumbest thing I've ever read related to the Royals when somebody tweeted, and then it got retweeted by somebody in my timeline because I didn't follow this idiot, because this is a really stupid statement. But it got retweeted by somebody, and he actually, because he agreed with it, and I almost unfollowed him over it, but the guy said that he would rather have Chris Getz play DH than Billy Butler at this point. Look, I know Billy Butler's bad, but that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard related to the Royals. Now, at a close second is Steve Fisiak. And the fact that that fans have anything to do with how the players play on the field. Now, let me set you up the scene a little bit here. I'm in the clubhouse for the Albuquerque Isotopes, and there's about nine of us that sit at a long bench table. And you've got the official scorer on one end and a couple of stats people, and then there's a guy that he goes on Twitter by Topes Writer. He writes for minor league baseball for the Isotopes. He actually makes a little bit of money doing it. Lucky bastard. And then there's typically somebody from the Albuquerque Journal. And then there's usually a scout or two or some random person, somebody from the other team, and me in the corner. Because I always sit in the corner because nobody else will sit there, and it leaves me alone. So we're sitting there, and so we've got all these guys. And today's game was just kind of blah, and so we were kind of BSing in the press box while watching the game, and I mentioned we were talking about something, I don't remember how it came up, but I mentioned that, you know, the comment about Steve Fisiak saying, oh, it was because there was a fan below us that was really into the game. God bless him, he was really into the game. And like I said, it was a pretty quiet day out there, it was kind of chilly, and every time they'd hit a ball that went foul, but it went more straight than the one before, he goes, there you go, you're getting it. It was like a little league coach. Probably the way Mike sound. No, Mike's probably like, hey, jerk, do better. But that's neither here nor there.
Sure. You nailed it.
Right. but, you know, he's sitting there and he's being very positive and what have you. And so I was telling these guys, I said, apparently that's how Royals fans are supposed to be, according to Steve Fisiak, their announcer. I said, he blamed the Royals' slow start on the fans being negative. And the guy goes, that is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. I said, us too. You know, it's just at this point, well, first off, you know, I don't know how Fisiak stayed in the business as long. I don't think he's as bad as a lot of people think he is, and I definitely don't think Hutt is as bad as most people put on him, but I am to the point now, especially after that comment yesterday, that Fisiak's gotta go. I don't care who you put in there. I mean, you can put some of these Royals guys in there that aren't very good on Fox Sports and just let them go. Hell, put Joel Goldberg in there and we'd be better served than what we have with Fisiak. I mean, have you ever heard anything as stupid as that, Jeff?
No, unless we're talking about everything else that Fisiak says. I mean, I'll tell you why the guy still has a career in this business, because he's got one hell of a voice. Like, the dude has a great voice for TV, radio, you know, play-by-play type stuff. It's just, that's a natural ability. The skill of being prepared and knowing what you're talking about and understanding your fan base and those things that you actually have to, you know, put the effort into and do, it just doesn't seem like it's there, you know. So to me, that's why he should go, because, you know, sometimes we kind of jokingly will rag on, you know, Joel Goldberg. We've had him on the show. He's a great guy, but the dude is just, he always finds the positive angle, because that's his job. You know, he's out there trying to facilitate to the fans and make it seem like positive, engage them. You know, that's the job of that crew. They need to try and find the positive, find the best they can, keep the fans involved, keep the fans positive.
Keep them listening and watching.
Yeah. Before you get off Joel, though, one thing about Goldberg is he's got a very hard job, too, that people don't realize, because he's a dying breed. He's a guy doing that job.
Yeah, that's true.
There's a lot more women doing that position these days, and so Joel's trying to be extra good, and that's why he comes off as quirky or whatever you want to call it, annoying, whatever, you know. And you know, obviously we have relationships through the show with Joel and think the world of him, because he's a super nice guy. I never would have imagined in my life that, because the one time that I had dealt with Joel Goldberg before is he had taken something that somebody said to Blog to the K to Ryan. He took that offensively, and so he jumped on our case, and I was like, wow, so that's what Joel Goldberg's all about. And then we had him on the show a couple of times and totally changed my opinion of Joel. And so anyway, sorry to interrupt, I wanted to throw that out there that Joel takes a lot of crap, and it's hard to do Joel's job.
Oh, definitely. And, I mean, the ultimate point there was just that going out and attacking your fan base and telling them that they are, not only are they not doing what they're supposed to be doing as a fan base, which, by the way, it's not up to him to decide what I do as a fan.
Correct.
But the fact that he's telling them that they're being fans incorrectly. And then, not only that, saying that the reason that the fans are mad because the team is bad is because they're not being the correct fans per the wisdom of Steve Fizeac. You know, so it's that, whether or not that's his intention, you know, that's how it comes off, and that's all I can base it off of. Just, you know, from the conversations that he's had on Twitter that I've seen with other people. So that was pretty asinine, and I gotta think with something like that, in a season this important, when the Royals are very, you know, it seems like often we rag on the Royals because of their press conferences are crappy and all that, but they do try, at least with their guys, you know, the Fizeacs and the Goldbergs of the world, they try and put that best foot forward, and they try and keep the fans engaged. So when you've got one of those guys that, I mean, you know, some have, it was a little bit different, but that's why Frank White got canned. You know, he attacked the front office, and it's a little bit different from the fans, but, you know, the Royals still try and be protective of the fans wherever they can, and in that context. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, I don't think anything would ever happen until the off season, but, I mean, I definitely know the Royals have got to be aware of it, and so I can't imagine that the Royals were just like, hey, good job, Fizz. You know, I'm sure they were like, hey, listen, you got to cut that out. That just can't happen. So that was, to answer your question, I don't know if I've ever seen anything that dumb from a hometown announcer about the fan base. I mean, and it's not like, I don't know, it's not like it's anything. The Royals fan base, as bad as maybe they can be at times, not bad, not nearly the worst in all of baseball. So it was just incredibly short-sighted comment on his part that he should probably, you know, he should have done some backtracking, but whatever.
And so he never said anything today about it?
Not as far as I know. I wasn't able to watch the whole game, so I didn't hear him mention anything.
Well, it would have been all over Twitter.
I think he was on the radio today, and I wasn't listening to the radio. I was watching on TV. So I don't. From what I saw on a few tweets, you know, he was just basically talking about the action, but it wasn't in, you know, the most supportive of tones. It was just, he was, you know, I think there's someone desperately needing a strikeout and things like that. So people jumped on him for that, and fair or unfair, you know, that's him trying to, you know, describe the action and paint the scene. I don't know. I mean, he's made enough mistakes. I don't really expect to see him back, but at the same time, you know, there's a whole other level of things that go into those decisions. But it was just silly. I mean, a lot of the Royals fans that I know are people who have been fans for 10, 15, 20 years, a span where, you know, the Royals have not been good.
And it's pretty silly to jump out at those people who are still watching, still, you know, passionately following every move, you know, watching every game through all of that. I mean, through a team that has, you know, three winning seasons in the last couple decades. I mean, it's pretty silly. It's pretty much a lack of self-awareness and understanding of, you know, the fan base and just how loyal a lot of these people are to sit there and say, hey, you have to be a fan this way, you know, just keep putting up with, you know, bad play and don't, you know, gripe about it. It's silly.
My thing is, you know, I think the comment is way out of line, and I know why they brought Hudd and Fizdjak in, because they wanted a new change, but a couple of things I want to hit on that Jeff said. I'm not necessarily a defender of Frank White when it comes to him getting canned by the Royals. I thought it could have been done a lot differently. I like Frank White, the person. I've had a lot of really good experiences with Frank. I have the utmost respect for him as a player. And honestly, I have the utmost respect for him as a TV personality. But him and Ryan were awful together. They were awful. And it's not Ryan's fault, because I know a lot of people don't like Ryan. It's not Ryan's fault. It's not Frank's fault. They were just awful together. They were a piss-poor match. And I think if they had been doing the TV and radio the way they are now, I think we might have saw a much better Frank, because Frank would have had, I think, more chance to talk. I think Ryan really was integrated into his role, and Frank was just supposed to be there to do Frank White-type things. And it didn't really give a chance for Frank White to be as intelligent and as good as he could have been. So, like everything else with the Royals, Frank White has kind of gotten the shaft in the deal in a way. But at the same time, Frank White wasn't, you know, him getting fired for job performance would have been just as likely as him getting fired for saying something about the front office. Now, let's not, you know, split hairs here. He got fired because he said something negative about the front office. People get their press credentials pulled for that. That stuff happens. They don't like it when you talk bad about the front office. Call it between the lines any way you want, but they don't like it when you talk bad about the front office.
Yeah, but he wasn't that great either, though.
That's what I'm saying, is he wasn't that good. He wasn't that great. He could have been fired for his performance just as easily as being let go for his comments. Now, with that said, I don't know if you guys ever listen to Omaha Baseball on the radio, but I want Mark Nasser. That's who I thought they should have went with to begin with. Guy is awesome. He understands baseball. He understands Kansas City baseball. He's been with the Isotopes forever. If they do go away from Hudd and Fizdjak, I hope they give Nasser a shot. And I don't know that they will, and maybe he doesn't want it, but I think I don't know why he wouldn't, and I think he'd be awesome at it. And we've had Mark on this show, so that's another reason why he's a great guy. But he's a fantastic human being, and I think he'd be good. And he understands baseball, and he's been doing it by himself, so he's used to painting the picture. And I talked to the Albuquerque Isotopes guy for a long time the other day about what he does, and he does it alone. And he talked about, you know, painting the, you know, he's having a conversation with the fans. He's not having a conversation with another person in the box, and the fans are eavesdropping. He's actually talking to the fans because Josh is in that booth by himself, and that's kind of what Mark does now. And I think if we brought that back to major leagues, even with somebody else in the box, but actually, you know, bring the fans back into it, make them feel involved, I think that would help a lot for the Royals right now, because people are starting, it only took 30 years, but people are starting to get disenfranchised with this organization, and that's a shame because baseball in Kansas City is great, and Kansas City's got a great baseball fan base. You know, it's nothing like that here, of course, because we don't have a pro team. But even with the minor league team, people love the Topes. Don't get me wrong. You see a lot of Isotope stuff, and you see a lot of Dodgers gear, and there were 7,000 people at the game today, which is a lot for a minor league team. A lot of minor league stadiums aren't even 7,000. I'm not sure how big Omaha is, but it's not much bigger than that at full capacity. You know, there was 12,000 or 11 or 12,000 for opening day. So, I mean, There is some serious interest, but it's nothing like Kansas City. I mean, on a cold, bitter, windy, rainy day at the K, during the week, you can still get 10,000 actual bodies into that stadium. And there is no other team in baseball that would do that if they were as bad as the Royals. Cardinals fan can claim they're the greatest fan base, you know, whatever. They've never been bad for a long period of time. And unless you've been bad for a long period of time, and still had your people show up in droves the way that the that the Royals have, you have no room to talk. And maybe that's not fair, and I'm going to get a lot of flack for it, but send it on to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com. I'm completely okay with that. I'm a big boy. I got my big boy diapers on. I can take your beatings. Don't worry about it.
Wait, diapers?
Yeah, I don't know why I went there, but why not? I was going to go with my big boy panties, and that didn't sound right either, so I switched to diapers at the last second. So,
all right.
Troy, just to further your point, I mean, you look at, like, the Tampa Bay Rays. I mean, they've been good for how many years now? 6-7 years, and they can't get, 15,000 people in their stadium.
Yeah, but they're in St. Petersburg, and that makes all the difference. I'm saying with my sarcastic tone, because there's no excuse for that. If you can't get people to show up, move the team.
There's a reason they put the Major League Baseball team there, and there was obviously at some point some interest. People aren't stupid, you know. I mean, obviously they make mistakes, but they obviously did their research and found out, hey, we should put a team here in Tampa Bay. You know, they show up for Buccaneers games. I mean, granted, when they're bad, they have problems, but when they're good, they, you know, so... Point being, you know, you look at the Marlins as well. I mean, they've never had good attendance down there. And granted, you know, you get the Miami excuse and all that. But just to further your point, I mean, there are teams that have been good and won much more than the Royals and still can't really do what the Royals do with a team that's been futile for the last 3 decades. So
now, to the Marlins' credit, that team has been owned very poorly. It's depending on who you ask. And
Marlins' credit?
Yeah, they've been owned
very poorly. Won 2 World Series in the last 20 years.
And then they every time that they've done it, they've sold off all their major players.
Sure, but, I mean, shoot. I mean, if they – do you think the Royals – if the Royals won a World Series 10 years ago, I mean, fans probably wouldn't be nearly as vitriolic as they are now, you know, because they'd have something to look back at and something to
– Yep.
Yeah.
No, we had that going for us, and, yeah, we decided to – to sell everything off and kind of rebuild again. But I mean, I thought it was funny because it was on like a 6-year cycle. The Marlins, they won in 97 and they won in 03. And then in 2009, again, they were really good. And then they ended up like barely missing the playoffs or whatever. And then they kind of sold it off from there. But still, the point, like, I don't think that, I think you're, the anger is soothed a little bit when you have some recent winning, even if it was short-lived, that you can kind of look back to and hold on.
And well, and I've got Marlins friends, and one of the guys that was going for Fan Cave that kind of like me got shafted. Which I'm going to talk about later. I actually asked him that question. You know, would he rather? Would he rather have the Marlins history or the Royals history? And he said the Marlins history, and I absolutely agree.
Well, we talked about this before, like 2 winters ago, I think. And it was, you know, which would you rather be? You know, the Royals with their collection of, you know, then prospects and others, and, you know, that promise, or would you rather be the Marlins who have rebuilt or been built from scratch, won a World Series, sold off, rebuilt, won again? You know, even if you've got some lean years where they're, you know, going with replacement players, basically, I mean, that's, you know, you still get those two flags. And I think we said then was flags fly forever and not Cactus League flags, the real ones.
Yeah, I mean, I would choose the Marlins for sure, just because, you know, if we're talking in terms of history, you know, we're kind of – there's an – and this is kind of a different element. This is kind of – I had a discussion with somebody on Twitter about this too, about, you know, somebody who's a big Chiefs fan doesn't really talk about the Royals and is just like, oh, all you people are just suckers more or less for, you know, giving this team your money and all that. And it's kind of like, well, there's an element of civic pride in it too, so that's kind of why you have the Royals. But that's a different topic. But just to say, I mean, I think it's – I don't know how we got off on this tangent, but I mean, this is something actually that I think we should – it's kind of been, along with the Physioc talk and everything, there's been a lot of other kind of backlash on Twitter and everything about, you know, how fans are negative and all that kind of stuff. It seems like we talk about this every year, but and that can be something we get into a little bit later in the show, because I think Troy wants to take a break now.
Well, we're going to come back and talk about the recent games and the recent failures, and because there's really no positives to talk about. Because trust me, I would much rather talk about the positive. I think I mentioned last year when the Royals were winning that, you know, the show is a lot easier to do when they're winning, because you don't have to dig out all the bad stuff and you can just talk about the Royals and you know, the roller coaster was fun. I'd rather be on the roller coaster right now than what we've got. So if at any point this team would like to start going up, that would be cool. But we're going to talk about that right on the other side.
Hey, Troy, what are you doing this weekend?
I'm going to grab a beer somewhere. What do you have in mind?
I heard about this awesome new bar downtown. It's called Rage. The waitresses have a contest to see who has the most piercing.
Oh, man, that's not really my scene.
Well, there's another bar close by called Spit Cup. Check it out. The bartenders wear chaps, and every hour they shoot a guy.
No, seriously, I just want a bar where I can sit down and watch the game.
Okay, I've got just the place. It's called Lilac. You sit on pillows, and you drink from eucalyptus leaves.
No, Ned, but I just want a place where I can get a cheap drink and watch the football game.
Okay, I got it. This place, it's got a TV. It's called 816.
Libidotosis.
Yep. All their drinks come in NBA hats.
Man, I just want a place like Kelly's.
Oh, you mean Kelly's Westport Inn? No, they've got all the basketball and bowl game. They've even got a heated roof. The view is really nice, too, if you know what I'm saying. Why didn't you just say you wanted to go to Kelly's?
Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road.
Welcome back
to
Kansas City Baseball Bowl. If you haven't made it out to Kelly's recently, please do so. They're a good sponsor of ours. I actually need to put a call into them to make sure they're going to continue to be a sponsor of ours and get all that squared away. But they've been with us since almost day one. I mean, it's hard to find. I was going through the archives, which is something I'm going to work on in the coming months, and there's not very many episodes that don't have Kelly's commercials in them, and that's very special. And Mike's working on some new ones for us. I'm sure you're tired of the old ones, and we are too. But
the ones talking about the iPhone 4 and its new Siri system.
Yeah, and I still like those. People get it, so they know to go out to 500 Westport Road at the corner of Westport and Pennsylvania and tell them the Kansas City Baseball Vault sent you, especially if you're getting waited on by Ezra or one of those guys. But you might know it. The only thing about that place is it is Mizzou heavy. A lot of their bartenders are Mizzou guys. So a lot of I get messages every now and again. Man, you didn't tell me they hate KU there. I said they don't hate KU. There's just a few guys that went to Mizzou there that are big Mizzou fans, and you know they're actually not too bad. But they've definitely got the bitter thing that a lot of Mizzou fans have going on that are Mizzou and Royals fans, and I honestly sympathize for those people, because at least I know what it's like to have a winner in my lifetime with my college team. Granted, Nebraska isn't doing much anymore, and they're extending stupid coaches too, just like the Royals, but at least they've won in my lifetime, and Mizzou fans have never felt that. They've never even really been that close, so I do sympathize with them, especially if the ones that are under 30 and, you know, I guess if you're a Chiefs fan, you can grab onto that, a couple playoff appearances. But it's crazy that our city, you know, Kansas City, if you're coming from the Mizzou side, you've never seen, you know, a championship game in the teams you love. You've never seen your football team win a playoff game. You've never seen your college teams do anything, you know, amazing. You've never seen your baseball team even make the playoffs. And so that's crappy to be a fan of a team like that. And that brings us right to where we're at today, which is, you know, here we are again. We thought the Royals were going to be improved. I mean, I know you guys read it off last week. I had the Royals winning 89 and missing the playoffs this year. But right now they look like a team that's going to lose 100 games, you know, and I don't want to be over dramatic about it, but because it is the equivalent, as somebody said on Twitter today, trying to play it down, it is the equivalent of if this was football, they'd be 0-1. Maybe closing in on 0-2, but definitely not out of it. And they're not out of it, but they've got to figure out how to play baseball. Because right now they're not playing offense, defense, pitching. They're not doing anything right. The only thing that's going well is that Ventura's pitched very, very well. Vargas has pitched very, very well. James Shields does James Shields things. But it's kind of downhill from there. And, you know, Moose is awful. Hosmer isn't putting up MVP numbers. Billy Butler is making us all pick up Billy Butler flags, or those that hate him picking up pitchforks and ready to run him out of town. And it's time to really see this team put it together. I mean, we've seen this before with them having everything off, and they've turned it on, and you hate to see it when it's when nothing's working. I guess it's better than when you get one thing at a time that's working, and you know the offense is good, but then the bullpen blows the games. Well, the bullpen gets it together, the offense is still good. Now starting pitching can't figure out how to give up less than 7 runs. But right now, I mean, the only thing that's positive right now is somewhat is starting pitching. Bullpen's been bad from people you don't necessarily expect to be. I mean, Aaron Crow used to be an all-star, and now he doesn't even look like he belongs on a Major League Baseball team. Wade Davis doesn't look like the reliever we expected him to be. He's sure no Luke Hochaver. Boy, does that ever sound weird. You know, it's just the little things right now. This team is really missing Hochaver, which, again, is odd to say. You know, they can't figure out how to put all the pieces together. And, I mean, where do you start, Jeff? Where do you fix this?
Well, the scary part is I don't know if it can be. And this is kind of what I kind of jumped into before we got to the break, where people talk about the negativity, whether it's on Twitter or Facebook or wherever. And part of it comes out, and I think, Mike, I had this kind of this discussion with you as somebody else on Twitter or somebody, I can't remember, but where the problem isn't that the Royals are off to a slow start. 4-7 is not a big deal. I mean, I think the Red Sox started off 0-6 a few years ago and ended up making the playoffs. So that's not a huge deal at all. The problem is we have a situation where the Royals, what were the big fears coming into this season? The offense wasn't going to step forward. The bullpen was going to regress. The starting pitching couldn't do what it did last year. You know, and then you could even break that down further and say, okay, well, Mike Moustakas is not going to be any better than he was, and Alcides Escobar isn't going to be any better than he was. And with the exception of starting pitching, which to this point through 11 games, incredibly small sample size and all that, but to this point, the starting pitching has been as good as it was last year. Everything else that we were afraid of as Royals fans has basically come true. And we've seen this script played out before. We've seen it happen. And it comes in with the Royals saying, oh, well, they're going to be competitive, and you know they just need a couple things to break their way, and it's playoff city, and those things don't break their way, and they go 69-93 or something like that. You know, I don't think this team is that bad, but the point is, it's what Sam Ellinger always says, you know, we come by our cynicism, honestly. And but to get to the major main point of your question, I mean, can it be fixed? I don't know. I mean, I'm going to say that, I mean, I think there's ultimately, you know, things are going to get better. It's not going to be quite this bad. But the real big things that need to be fixed, I don't know if they will be. You know, the bullpen, I mean, Aaron Crow has been shaky for a couple years. I don't know if he's going to get much better. That's kind of who he is at this point. You know, Wade Davis, he looks to me like he's just gone. As in, I mean, I don't know if he doesn't like playing for Kansas City. I don't know if maybe his confidence is just thrashed by losing his job last year as a starter. I don't know what the deal is, but he just looks to me like someone who had it and lost it, and now he doesn't know how to get it back, and he's scared. But it's... So I don't know where those things are going to get. I don't know how those things are going to get better, really. I mean, if Kyle Zimmer comes along and they can either put him in the bullpen or put him in the starting rotation and then move someone like Chen to the bullpen, you know, then maybe we're starting to see a little bit of that even out. You know, if you know when Lewis Coleman gets back, gets in the full swing of things and all that. So I mean, you know, it can get a little bit better, but I don't know that it will. And then one thing that I just have no faith in whatsoever is the idea that Mike Moustakas can rekindle any sort of magic that he's had. He looks lost. He had a couple hits today. I mean, he's getting a little bit better, but he wasn't going to hit 083 the entire season. You know, so, I mean, it's nice that he's got a couple hits, but, you know, he's going to go 2 for his next 40, and we're going to be right back to where we started. So I just don't have much faith in that, and I don't have much faith in Alcides Escobar either. So those were big fears, and they needed to not happen. And so far, it doesn't look like any changes have worked. And I'm not crying that the season's over or anything like that. I still think this is a very good baseball team, and they can win a lot of games. You know, I haven't ever thought that they were a playoff team, but they're close. The only problem is now, with the way things have started, their margin error. They're, what are they, like 1-3, 1-4 in one run games? I mean, their margin of error is really slim because Mike Moustakas is a black hole in the offense. Aceides Escobar is a black hole. They were missing Omar Infante for a couple games because he had his injury, and so those things are, they don't have any. Not only do I not have faith that Moustakas and Escobar will get any better offensively, but they don't have any options either. You know, are they gonna put Jason Donald in there? They're gonna put Valencia in there every day at third base. I mean, are they gonna call up Christian Colon and put him in there? They just don't have any options. So unfortunately, it's gotta be Mike Moustakas has to figure something out, and I just don't have any faith that he will. So to me, if I'm negative at all, that's why. Because it's not something about the fact that the Royals are 4-7. It's that they need some answers to some pretty big questions that they were supposed to have filled and or fixed, and I don't see those answers.
Mike?
Well, I mean, there hasn't been a lot of progress so far. It's you still have to say, okay, it's only 11 games, but you know, the pattern holds. I mean, we saw Eric Hosmer in 2011, and then he had two full seasons and still hasn't really shown that superstar potential yet. Is it still there? Yeah, possibly, but, you know, he's grounding into double plays, and, you know, he's missing pitches that are out over the plate that are hittable. And then the other key guys, you know, Butler is just having a miserable start. I mean, he's striking out more than he has. He's hitting nearly everything on the ground. And, you know, that seems to be the thing with everybody. I mean, guys like, Nori Aoki, who is supposed to be a guy who never strikes out. He struck out 8 times in 10 games. So you've got all these things that you have expectations coming in. You expect Aoki to be the prototypical leadoff hitter, and he's done well. He did well on the homestand, in the first homestand, but it doesn't seem like he's been able to hit on the road. Infante, he's done okay, but he did get hurt in that one game, and that really, it pretty much cost them the following game when he was out because they didn't call anybody up.
That has to either go on management or that has to go on your general manager. But and I'm not a Ned hater. I think the Ned hate's gone way too far, but I put that one on Ned because Ned's got to go to Dayton Moore and say, look, dude, I need somebody that can actually play second base. I don't care if you get me Giovitella or you bring me Christian Colon or you bring me whoever. Danny Valencia is not my answer at second base tomorrow. I need somebody now. Figure out some way.
And they learned that lesson, it seemed, because they did call up Giovitella the very next day, and then they didn't play him after that one game. To one extent, that's because Infante recovered quicker than anybody expected him to, but at the same time, it's like, you know, Giovitella is a guy who, I mean, we don't have to have the Giovitella conversation again, but, I mean, it's just like...
We beat that drum enough.
It's just like, it's par for the course at this stage, but yeah, I mean, the guys that couldn't be black holes that had to contribute something so far really haven't done a whole lot, although Escobar's kind of heating up. He had 2 bunt hits today, and he had that bases clearing double last Monday, so he's contributed, and I think people would be surprised that he's got more RBIs than Hosmer right now, but it's again just that one hit. But the guys that you said couldn't be liabilities are being liabilities, and the guys that you expected to be good haven't been very good. Now and then the bullpen, it's the same thing. It's like Crow has been wild. He's been really bad when he inherits runners. Wade Davis has been either pretty good or he's been really bad. So he's another guy. And today, you know, he had a costly error and then kind of fell asleep afterwards. So that was a problem. Kelvin Herrera has given up a couple runs. He's been good most of his appearances, but he has given up some runs. And Greg Holland's been a little shaky in some spots too. So nothing's really gone right other than, I guess, Sal Perez has come out and he's hitting pretty well. Lorenzo Cain is hitting pretty well. You've got Jason Vargas has been very good. We'll see if that continues, but, I mean, he's been good so far. And Ventura was amazing. Hater. Well, I mean, track me down in September and we'll see how he's doing. Ventura was fantastic in his start. I mean, he was working everything. So that's, I guess everything's kind of gone to crap just in this one series, where, you know, Shields got rocked yesterday, and you know, Chen got beat up a little bit. I mean, they went into Minnesota and they lost all three games by a total score of what, 21-5. I mean, that's like the worst team in the American League right there, and they just got crushed.
Well, if I may jump in just quick, Mike.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about it last year on the show, and if the Royals are going to take that next step and be that good team, they have the teams they're better than.
Yep.
They did it last year. They were 15-3 against the Twins, and they just got swept.
Yeah. Yeah, and not even, I mean, Ricky Nolasco's okay. He's been a pretty consistent pitcher, but he's not really been great. The Royals made him look like Greg Maddux, and they did the same thing with Kevin Correa today. And it's just, you know, I don't know what the deal is. Right now, they're hitting, like, everything on the ground. It seems like everything's a ground out or a pop-up. They're not working the count. They didn't work with hardly any walks. They have one home run, and we're 2 weeks into the season. Yeah, you know, I don't know what the heck to do about any of that. It's just a big mess. I mean, what they can do is short-term maybe shake up the lineup a little bit. I mean, I would say Sal Perez is hitting pretty well. Plug him in for Butler. You know, swap those two righties. Gordon's hitting a little better than Hosmer. Maybe swap those guys. You know, that's one change you can make. It doesn't really disrupt the makeup, the right-left makeup of the lineup. And, you know, it puts guys who are hitting in better positions to do something and, you know, maybe take some pressure off the other guys. But Ned says he doesn't really want to do that. I mean, he's hyper concerned with, you know, getting into players' domes, as he says, and messing with their confidence. And it's like, well, what they're doing now in their current spot doesn't seem to be doing much for their confidence either. So,
I mean, you know, I'm usually pretty hard on BH and Detmo for all the stats that he pulls that are, you know, very small sample, not necessarily small sample sizes, but odd stats. And I've publicly, you know, given him hell for that. But, you know, one thing that he pulled up that I thought was right on point was that when Ned was in Milwaukee, sorry, I lost my train of thought there for a second. When he was in Milwaukee, it took him 11 games to realize that Braun at 3 and Fielder at 4 wasn't working. Two of the best players, well, we'll see what Braun really is, but supposedly two of the best players in baseball, possibly, you know, two all-timers, couldn't work in certain positions, and it took Ned Yost 11 games to figure it out, and then once he did, they were fine. So hopefully Ned can figure it out soon and you know, fix it from there.
Well, here's some other numbers, too. Like, coming into this game, the Royals were 28th in the majors in line drive percentage. Most of the time, if you hit a line drive, you're going to be getting a base hit, but if, you know, you're hitting fly balls or ground balls, you're not.
What's it, like 75% the line drive rate typically turns into a hit?
Yeah. Yeah,
right. Something like that. So
yeah and it's their fourth in ground ball percentage. So that's, you know, the fourth most ground balls as a percentage of their balls put into play. I mean, that's a problem too, because only, you know, maybe 30% of those go for hits, maybe even less than that. And they're third in infield fly balls. So pretty much everything they're doing is designed to not get a base hit. I mean, they're not hitting fly balls, so they're not going to hit home runs. When they do hit those fly balls, a lot are on the infield. They're not hitting line drives, and they're putting the ball on the ground. And so then you run into the thing where Eric Hosmer has 4 double plays in 2 weeks, and Billy Butler has 3 in 2 weeks, and Alex Gordon has 3 in 2 weeks. And so even when you get those runners on, you're not doing anything with them, and the end result is that the Royals have like a 500 OPS with runners in scoring position, and that's not a way to score any runs.
We're going to talk about Billy Butler here in a second, but there was a tweet that came in today, and it just kind of blew my mind, and I'm gonna put it out there to you guys and put it to the fire and see how you guys come out with this. But because I made the remark that Dayton Moore is going to laugh his way to the bank with the signing of Vargas, figuring that Vargas does continue to do. Obviously, he can't keep the pace he's doing now. It's too good. It's not historically correct for him. But if he has a good year, which is he's setting up to have right now, unless the wheels fall off. If he has a good year, I said, you know, right now, Dayton Moore is laughing his way to the bank with the Vargas signing. Aaron McKitty, AMAC8419 on Twitter, said he won't be laughing when this offense causes him to get the boot. And I said, how is that his fault? Because players got to play, managers got to manage. Once the general manager gets the players out there, they've got to come through. And I mean, pretty much every national writer was saying that this offense should be good enough to compete. And he continued with the lack of productive players is being Dayton Moore's fault. And I don't see how that can in any way be the general manager's fault, that the players aren't productive, when on paper they are supposed to be good players. And then somebody followed that up with, Instant Danny M at 17907 said he'll be crying in the closet that he didn't trade Country Ground out, referring to, you know, playing off Country Breakfast for Billy Butler. So let's get this out of the way first. Billy Butler, yes, he's hitting into a lot of double plays. He did it in 2010. He hit into 32. It's the most in his career. Last year, he hit the second most in his career, 28. The year before, the year that everybody loved him, he hit 20. So, yes, he's hit two more. The year that he was a silver slugger, he hit 20 double plays. He's hit eight more that year. Now, he's only hit three this year. And, yes, he's grounded out a lot. But you would think that he's, every time coming to bat, he's hit into a double play. He's only hit into three this year. Additionally, everybody wants to talk about how bad Butler is. Okay? This was a pretty decent team offensively last year. I think everybody accepts that.
They weren't good.
They weren't bad.
Awful. Right.
They were borderline decent.
So I'll give you decent. Okay. So there's two stats that I really love: OPS plus and WAR. Those are the two that I grab a hold of, because advanced stats is frankly too much for me. I can get a hold of a couple of things, and that's all my brain can handle. So, because I like to watch baseball, I don't like to watch numbers, and I'm a numbers guy. But baseball with advanced stats, it's gotten to be crazy. But we can.
I'll let that one go, because it's all right. Go on.
Well, but you get it, because I've never been on this show. I have never ever been the advanced stat guys. That was your job. That was your guys' job. That's never been what I'm about. And you know, I'm the way things look, and I've kind of gotten away from that. You know, I've always been the eye test guy, which is usually fake Bob Fesco, as I call him, Radio Bob Fesco. That's what he wants to grab onto, is that it's by the eye test things are good or bad. It doesn't matter what you advanced stats guys think. And what Bob doesn't want anybody to realize is he actually has a great understanding of advanced stats, and he's much smarter than he plays up on the radio. So fake Bob Fesco talks about the eye test a lot, and there's something to be said for the eye test. I mean, what you see is there's a lot of fact in what you see. However, there's a lot of fact in the numbers too. And so according to OPS Plus last year, which is a rating system for based off of slugging per bat and a few other stats put together, and it's generally accepted as one of the better offensive stats. And Eric Hosmer was our leader at 118. 100's about average. So, in fact, this is going to actually solidify what you guys were saying, that the team was decent, because they have in the starting lineup, they're starting eight. There was the general starters for this team: Hosmer, Butler, Perez, Gordon, Lowe, Kane, Moustakas, Escobar. Those eight. Four guys were above 100, so above average. Four guys were below average. Alex Gordon and David Lowe are your middle splitters. Alex Gordon was 103. David Lowe was 96. Sal Perez was 105. A guy that I think most everybody adores, more so probably for his defense and his offense. He doesn't walk enough, all those things. But Billy Butler was number two at 116. Hosmer was number one at 118. If you look at WAR, which is wins above replacement, if you took this guy out of the lineup and you went and got somebody else from your minor league system, and that guy was an average baseball player, he would have a WAR of zero.
Not average, replacement level. Easily picked off of AAA or signed as a, you know, some kind of off the street free agent with some experience.
Okay.
Average is about two WAR, so.
Okay, well, that's not going to really reinforce what I'm going with here. But last year was Billy Butler's worst year as far as pretty much every stat goes, okay? So is he trending in a bad way? Absolutely. But he even had a WAR last year of 2.2. So he is still better than a lot of what's out there. Now, is he getting dangerously into average territory? Would I pick up a $12 million option on him next year? I don't know. Probably not. I mean, Sal Perez was your WAR leader at 4.38. Alex Gordon was 3.9. Hosmer was 3.6. Kane Lowe, both ahead of Butler, and then it was Dyson, Bonifacio, and it's downhill from there. But, you know, the only reason I'm bringing up these stats is because it's not that I'm beating the Billy Butler drum, because Billy Butler's got to start hitting, because Billy Butler's a hitter. He's not a defenseman. He actually has a negative defensive WAR. That's important. But he's not supposed to be. Lucky for Billy Butler, he plays in the league with the DH. And because of that, he's been able to make a lot of money. Is he worth $8 million this year? Maybe. I mean, was he worth $8 million last year? What did we say that a win above replacement was worth last year? About $3 million, so he was a little overpaid?
It's about $5 million.
Was it last year? Because I thought that's what it was this year.
It's generally been accepted the last few years at about $5
million. Okay, then he was underpaid last year.
Yeah.
At $8 million, his WAR of 2.2 was underpaid. So should Billy Butler have been traded? Maybe. There was talk of it. But who are you going to put in that spot? Because everybody that I named above him are starters. Everybody that we've picked up this offseason, which I'm going to get to that too, are about that range. It's not like you would have been making a great improvement by getting rid of Billy Butler. Now, you want to say that Moore had a bad offseason. I don't know where you start with that, because Aoki's been battling injuries, but other than that, you know, he's been all
right. Infante?
Oh, I'm sorry. Aoki's been all right. He's not been battling injuries. He's right. Just been all right. But it's also a very small sample size. You know, this is a guy that has done average baseball-type things. And honestly, his OPS plus this year in a small sample size is at 113. So he's an above-average player right now, which is what you wanted from him. And he's a hell of a lot of an improvement over what you had at second base. Omar Infante got hit in the face with a baseball and came back 2 days later and has played pretty good baseball in the meanwhile. Now, I don't know about you guys. I get hit in the face with baseball. I'm taking a couple of days to get my crap together, and then I'm taking a couple more days to make sure my crap's together, because I don't know how he didn't get a concussion. I get, you know, granted, I had a car accident, so I'm more susceptible to concussions, but I get a concussion from just bumping my head. You know, if I'm not paying attention and I happen to hit something that's right at my level, I can get a concussion. So I can't imagine somebody like that taking a baseball off their jaw and not getting a concussion somehow. That blows my mind. And he's having, you know, an average to above average year, and he's an improvement, you know, over. And then Lorenzo Cain's back. Hopefully he stays healthy, and that helps this team out a lot. Vargas has been very good. Danny Valencia hasn't really been able to prove anything. He's had 8 plate appearances.
Yep.
You know, what do you want to look at on that aspect? And people want to say, well, we should have kept Will Smith. Will Smith would have been better than a lot of what we had. Well, Will Smith's doing well because of kind of where he's at, and he wouldn't have been a starter with this team. He was still behind other pitchers, and he should have been. And, you know, you can argue if Duffy should be a starter on this team above Chen, and if Will Smith should have been here instead of Chen. I could probably go with either of those, but it wouldn't have been Will Smith. It would have been Duffy. And so Will Smith still wouldn't have been in the right position for Will Smith to be in, and it provided something that the Royals need. And it'll be interesting to look and see what Danny Valencia is at the end of the year. Now, I've been very long-winded with this because I'm not necessarily defending Dayton Moore, but to say that he had a bad offseason is bull. Because you look at people that are a hell of a lot smarter than a lot of us writers for major publications, and I had pulled up several of them after that comment was made, but here's one from February 10th from SI. Their staff rated the Royals offseason at an A-, both January 23rd and then a final grade of an A-, and that was even after they signed Bruce Chen and released Emilio Bonifacio. That didn't affect their grade. They were, you can, you know, search it and read the article, but they were fine with what happened. Yes, Ervin Santana's gone. He was a good pitcher, but he's going to have regression. But, you know, there was a conversation between Craven Moorhead, who's a guy that I know a lot of people don't like because he's a little abrupt, and guy on Twitter goes by Richie, R-I-C-H-I-E. Both guys that are a little abrupt, so they rub a lot of people wrong, but for me, they're fine. And honestly, the guy behind Craven Moorhead actually is a very nice human being and helped me a lot with my job, with what I'm doing with transferring careers. But they were saying that, you know, you can't say that the pitching was going to get better with what we had. Absolutely you can. Yes, Ervin Santana was great last year, but if you don't think there's going to be some regression this year, you're crazy, and there's going to be regression in Atlanta for him. And what Vargas is doing is above and beyond what anybody thought he'd do and probably won't maintain. But getting Wade Davis out, putting in what we have now with the five, is a better starting rotation than we had last year, and I believe David Leske wrote about this on Pine Tar Press. So there were wins to be had in the starting rotation. Yes, the bullpen was going to regress, but nobody saw it being this bad. If you saw it being this bad, then you just I don't know how you can consider yourself positive on
the
team at all.
With the bullpen, I mean, this time last year, people were calling for Holland to be cut because he'd blown a couple of games. And then he goes on and has the second-best relief pitcher season in all of baseball. So, I'm not panicking yet. Now, give me another month, and if everything's still going south for the bullpen and for all the hitters, yeah, then I'm going to be, pretty much looking forward to Kansas football season, which is a weird thing to be doing. So,
but, I mean, my point is, can you really be upset with what Dayton Moore has done? Has he not made an attempt to put the best team on the field that he can do? Did he misread the pitchers that were available in free agency? Maybe, but maybe he saw something in Vargas that we didn't, and maybe Vargas is going to be good at the K. It's happened before, you get these pitchers that haven't been good or have been mediocre, and then they're good at the K. Jeremy Guthrie, if he doesn't regress too much this year, will be a great example of that for far longer than we ever expected, the last couple of years. And Bruce Chen's another example. Maybe Vargas is just another one like them that gets through. I mean, I just don't think you can blame Dayton Moore for 7 years of futility that got us to the eighth year where we're expecting results. You can do that, absolutely. I have no problem with that. But this year he has done everything within his power to put a team on this field that can compete. Now it's up to the players to play and the coaches to coach, and I don't think either of those things are happening right now.
Well, they're in a better. They started the season in a better position than they had started last year, because last year they started with Chris Getz as the opening day second baseman and Jeff Francoeur in right field, and this year they've started with the same guys around them, but Nori Aoki and Omar Infante in right and second base. So that's an improvement. I've talked about the trading out Santana and Wade Davis for Vargas and Ventura, and how that can actually be a gain for the Royals. And Vargas has pitched well through three starts. I mean, a lot of this is, 4 days ago the Royals were 4-4, and looked like they were going to be able to take advantage of some bad teams, and they had a really terrible series. This was an awful series. Exactly the opposite of what they needed to do. Between when the game ended today and when we started recording, I tried to get that perspective that, okay, these three games count and they hurt, but it's only three games, and the outcome of these three games doesn't determine the rest of the season. Now, there are some really bad patterns that you want to see corrected, the bullpen, like we've talked about, ground balls, like we've talked about, and things like that. But overall, I mean, by the end of the year, this team's going to be okay. I just don't know that they're going to be playoff material. And that was my feeling when the season started. So I don't know that they're too far off of that, except for the performance hasn't been very good. But they do. I mean, you're right. They do have to be out there and perform. Dayton Moore can get those guys, and he upgraded a couple positions and kind of held steady at starting in the starting rotation. And so, yeah, I mean, he did what he could do. They've got a franchise high payroll, so I mean, you can't really sit there and act like they're skimping anywhere. There could have been opportunities here and there that maybe fell through, and there could have been things that just people wanted to happen that were just never going to happen. So it's tough to analyze those moves from this position, just because we don't have all the information, but we can kind of get a pretty good idea of, okay, this guy's here, this might be a good fit for him, this is about what he's going to want to make. I mean, there's great resources out there. Fangraphs does a really good job. MLB Trade Rumors does a really good job, and they're really good at anticipating what contracts are going to go out, what trades might happen, and things like that. And so you can get pretty close, but a lot of moves just kind of happen out of nowhere, too. So I don't know what else he could have done that would have been available, possible. There are some people that really hate the Omar Infante signing. So, even if it's an upgrade at second, it's still not enough. So, I mean, you can criticize the moves all you want, and you can back them up all you want, no matter what. But in the end, I mean, the players do have to go out there and hit.
How on earth do I find a site, do I search for MLB salaries and I get last year's numbers. How do people not update, especially CBS, how do they not update their site so that I can have the right numbers that I need to Google? But
Google COTS contracts?
I did that, but COTS doesn't have a list. I can go to each of the teams, but I don't have time to click through them.
Do USA Today. They have one. But sometimes they'll update their numbers, but they won't update what the default year is right away. So, like, you'll go to, like, I know USA Today, sometimes if you go to their salary index, it'll be last year's numbers, but they still have the current year available.
I'll look, because the only reason I know the ones on CBS were wrong is because the Yankees were still number one, and the Dodgers spent $235 million this year. Now, covering their AAA team, imagine that. Imagine being a guy in their AAA system of a team that has spent $235 million. You know how hard it is to break into a team that has spent $235 million? You just got to pray to get traded.
Or for an injury.
Well, and that's what...
And much better, but...
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at the four outfielders for the Dodgers, some of the outfield candidates that are available for to move up to the Dodgers are actually might get a shot, because there's no way that team stays healthy. But anyways, I'm going to keep looking for this. I was trying to see where the Royals fell within the whole scope of the league. I mean, no, they're not up there with the Yankees and the Dodgers, but it's not like they didn't spend this year. And their spending is in line with baseball.
I believe, let's see, I thought last I heard they were like 18th.
Yeah, and they were, they were 19th last year, which does put them in the bottom half, sure. But
they're the 28th or 27th largest market, so they're outspending their market.
Okay, well, there you go. That's good enough for me. So, I mean, I think as much as you want to hate on the ownership and as much as you want to hate on Dayton Moore, I think those arrows are misguided right now. If you want to be mad at Billy Butler for what he's doing right now for his decline, that's fine. But saying Billy Butler's not a good player and he didn't earn his money last year doesn't work for me, because he was still cheap last year. And so that's my gripe with Billy Butler. Now, does Billy have to turn it around? Absolutely. I mean, even Clint Scholes and I and some of the others that have been heavy Billy Butler flag wavers are coming around to saying that Billy Butler's got to start to produce. And like I said, I would not pick up his option next year right now. He is not a good enough player for me to pick up his option with what the Royals have in their farm system and what, you know, they have on the team right now. They would probably be just as fine, give or take, without Billy Butler next year if Billy Butler's going to be the same player this year that he was last year, which is a slightly above average player.
Yeah, I mean, there's reason for concern, because he had, you know, he had his peak year in 2012, and then last year he didn't hit for as much power, he wasn't quite as good, and you did expect a bounce back. And for him to come out and start the year the way he has, and in the manner that he has, where he's not hitting a lot of line drives and he is striking out a little bit more, and you know, he's hitting so many ground balls, yeah, that's concerning, especially with his body type, which he gets a lot of flack for, but I don't know if there's a lot he can do. I mean, nature is nature in a lot of cases. If he lost 40 pounds, would he have any power? I don't know. Probably not. So then there's another thing. Okay, now he's in shape, and you're just going to harp on him for that. But all in all, I mean, it's something where maybe it is the sign of the decline, and you know, this is something to keep an eye on. And if it is, then yeah, they're not going to pick up that option because they can do so much else with it. But you know, I would still want to see him this summer and see what he does and kind of go from there. I mean, I don't think he's done, but there's definite concern. I mean, there's reason to be concerned right now. Every time he has come up with a runner on, you do kind of get that little, you know, clinch in your stomach where you're like, oh, crap, don't ground into a double play, because I just don't want to hear it. And that's not a good feeling, and that's not a good thing for you know, the guy who's hitting cleanup for you. So, you know, he needs to turn it around, but we're also still, you know, still talking 40 plate appearances. I mean, if this was a stretch in middle of June, how much would it make, you know, how much would it stick out at that stage? You know, I don't think as much, and I think that kind of changes the frame of reference on it.
I never would have imagined that Zach Greinke would have been a player that would have been all about the money, which we all know he has, but I didn't realize that he was the top paid player in baseball this year, according to USA Today. That's a little crazy to me. And that's the kind of money that James Shields wants. That's just nuts. Just nuts. All right, we'll be right back. And if you just wanted to talk about baseball, you can go ahead and turn off the show now. When we get back, we're going to talk a little bit about the show, the direction we're going, and, well, the fact that I'm leaving.
Can we talk about Game of Thrones, too?
We might be talking about Game of Thrones. God, I love that show. I got to catch up. I'm still on season 3.
Got to make sure we're done in time to watch it.
Correct.
No, I'm working on that. Let me get to break, and we can get done so we can watch it.
Okay.
But when we come back, I'm going to talk about that. And a lot of you have asked me about the MLB Fan Cave, and I need to thank a lot of people. And so when I come back, it's going to be a lot about me. So we'll be right back on the other side.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup. Love letters, talking to the wall. Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends. The best pizza in Kansas City and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Now, it's April, which, you know, I don't think we celebrated our birthday last month, Mike, of this show.
I don't think so. I dug up the I dug up the YouTube video of the little party at Kelly's that we had up on the rooftop.
Where we almost got kicked out for burning Peyton Manning and effigy.
Right. Yeah, because Jeff holds a grudge and lets it out in pyrotechnical ways.
Had one of the bartenders tell us we had to stop. That was funny. Anyways, so we turned 3 last month, and 3 years for a podcast is pretty old. You don't see it happen, especially for a podcast that doesn't have any sort of financial backing. Yeah, we get some money from Kelly's, and it's kept us on the air, but it's not making us rich, and we're not making money. In fact, Mike and Jeff have never seen one penny out of this show. I've seen a little bit that I've put back into trying to improve some recording and stuff like that, and not always have the options paid off, but that's true and everything. But, you know, we've done all right as a podcast, and, you know, I took it a step farther and reached out to Clint initially, and you know, Clint and I created the Royals Podcast Network, and then I took it a step further yet and threw a couple extra shows on there with some guys and gals that I think have done a pretty good job, and I'm really proud of where the network is now. Unfortunately, life is not always kind, and I'm just at a point where I can no longer continue to consistently host this show. Being an hour behind in time hurts the guys. It hurts them trying to get everything planned out and get the show going. Additionally, I didn't even know this, but I'm when I originally made this decision, but I'm taking on a new job that's going to be a lot more hours. It's going to keep me later in the evening. And on top of that, I was granted a press pass to the Albuquerque Isotopes, which has allowed me to work on another project, which I'm doing somewhat with Fansided's Grading the Curve, where I'm going to write for them, and I'm going to do the Isotopes thing. Now, I would much rather this be the Omaha Storm Chasers, and I could do Royals-type things all the time and really involve that in the show. The cool thing is there's a lot of minor leaguers that have – or a lot of players that have left the Royals that we all love. You know, a lot of the listeners – I always say we have a really smart listener base. And because of that, you're going to have an interview the next day that there's no show. You're going to have a couple of interviews with Miguel Olivo and Clint Robinson. And Clint Robinson likes Billy Butler, by the way. He thinks he's a pretty good player, one of the best hitters he's ever seen. A little insight into that interview. And that's coming from a guy that was blocked solely by Billy Butler. So keep that in mind. But Clint and I got those interviews coming. And let me tell you, C-Rob is one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. We've had him on the show before, but I've had a chance to directly, you know, be around him quite a bit the last week with the games at, in Albuquerque. And it's been a lot of fun. And I've tweeted some pictures and things from the Isotopes Park, the lab. You know, I met Tommy Lasorda yesterday. I met Branch Rickey's grandson, who's the president of the PCL. You know, it's been a very interesting experience, and it's going to lead to a lot of interviews. Like this week, I'm hoping to catch up with Jeff Francoeur, who plays for the El Paso Chihuahuas now, trying to work his way back into the major leagues with the Padres. And so I know it's just great.
Francoeur.
And, of course, if you haven't seen the video yet, I don't know where you've been. You must be under a rock. I haven't seen that video.
I will link it when we post again. This up, because you need to see it.
It's awesome, and I want to ask him about that and whatever. But, you know, I'm taking on a new career. I'm going to try to sell cars, and I know there's a lot of negative that goes with selling cars, but, you know, there's people out there that have made a lot of money selling cars, and it's a lot of hours, but I'm at a point in my life where my college degree did not pan out, and I want some things out of my life that I'm not getting right now, and so I need to focus on those. And so in doing so, I'm going to leave the show. For the most part, I'll be around, you know, I'll pop in if the guys are doing a late show or I happen to be off the day that it's recording. But even then, if I'm working 6 days a week, like I think I'm going to, and going to a lot of games, my wife is not going to be down for me doing a podcast on one of the few days we get together. So, you know, this off season, I may be around more than I am now. And I'm sure I'll be back in some aspect. I'm still going to be working behind the scenes to make sure that RoyalsPodcast.com is the best Royals audio site you will find. I don't want to say it's going to be the best Royals site, because I think that kind of crafts on Kings of Kauffman and Royals Review and some of the others that are out there that are very, very good.
And Pine Tar Press. Yeah.
I better not forget Pine Tar Press. I'll be getting a phone call. But Clint and Dave are doing great things over at their show, and I'm really proud of what Ben and Audra are doing. You know, their show's been kind of goofy. It'll be interesting to see the direction they take during the season. And then the guys over at Triple Play Podcast, you know, kind of on their own started that show. I told them that I was going to put them together and that I wanted to do something in January, but I didn't have time with the wedding to get it all figured out. So they took it upon themselves to get everything figured out and put a show together and sent it to me. And they do a very good national look that is Royal-centric, and I've really enjoyed their show. And in fact, I want to go back, and I was busy at the time, but I needed to link a show that they did to my Diamondbacks following, because they broke down Diamondbacks pitching better than I've heard people that follow the Diamondbacks. So if you're not listening to those guys, I think you're missing out on a lot. We're going to continue to do what we do. We're going to get a lot of guests. I'm going to continue to work on getting guests as well. I'm going to work on interviews separate from the show, because I'll have more time to do those. If when it's just me and I have to line up the time, I'm going to be able to do those. And, of course, getting the interviews out at Isotopes Park. Unfortunately, the PCL realigned this year and Omaha doesn't come to town. Otherwise, I may not have taken this other job. If the PCL had not realigned, I may not have taken this job in all seriousness, because the Royals would have been here 9 games and I would have wanted to be off for every one. Or, I'm sorry, the Storm Chasers would have been here for 9 games and I would have wanted to be off to maximize those 9 games. Unfortunately, they're only going to be in Albuquerque once every other year for 4 games. So I'll try to make sure that next year I get it all. But I'll have some content for this site through that. And I think Jeff... Well, I know Jeff's going to do a great job as the new host. It's always been kind of weird with us as a three-man team, because, you know, when we were back in the house, it was easy to do the four-man team. We could look at each other. We knew who was going to talk. And now it gets a little crowded and it gets a little long on the shows, and we realize that. So really, it's going to be better for the show that I'm not on it for a lot of reasons, probably because these two are a lot smarter and have a lot more time. Well, not that they have more time, but pay better attention to the Royals than I can right now in my current situation. Both not being near a computer during the day and just everything that's going on in my life. I'm grateful for everybody that listens to us, and I mean that truly. It's been very special to do this show for 3 years. I'm grateful that we had the Ice House when we had it. I'm grateful that we learned from that. I'm grateful for running into Fake Ned and being able to work with him for however long we were in with him, and then eventually in his house. I think we learned a lot from that, and then I'm grateful that these guys helped to keep my mind straight when I didn't want to do it anymore after we were going to be doing it online. I never wanted to do the show online. That was the whole point of having the Ice House. And when Chris had his personal issues come up and we were out, there was a point where I just didn't want to do it anymore. And Greg and Mike and Jeff kept me together and got me on board, and you know, we were able to put out a great show for, I mean, how long has it been since we left Chris's? It's been over a year, hasn't it?
Oh, it's been well over a year.
Yeah, I mean, we've been doing this a long time this way, and we haven't had the good guests like we used to, and that a lot of that falls on me because I'm not out there doing it. I don't have the time to get out and get the guests and to line them up, and it's too hard to line three people up to do a show and then the guests on top of that and really have any reference. But I think with Mike and Jeff doing it, you know, I can still help these guys line them up, and Mike's got all the contacts I do, and you know, they'll be able to do a much better show without me in the way right now. So I really truly believe that, and I think we'll be really good, and I'm still going to work on a lot of things behind the scenes and doing that. And then additionally, I want to thank everybody that took the time to go to voteroyalman.com and watch that video. And I want to thank Chris Kamler so much for helping me put it together, and I want to thank my wife for the hours we invested into that project and her family. Her mom made sure that every one of Megan's aunts and cousins and everybody went and watched that video and thumbs up it, and she had it on Facebook and calling people, and that was a great experience, even though it didn't turn out the way it should have. And I am bitter, and not that I didn't make it, because part of me never thought I would, but that they changed the rules and never told anybody. And really, they used us. They used us to promote the Fan Cave, but they already knew who they were going to take for that MTV show. They knew it a long time ago, and they didn't ever let any of us know. And I know there's a lot of people that feel the way I do on that, and I'm very upset about that. I had the most watched video, and in years past, that's always been enough. And I think had I done this 2 years ago, I might have made the Cave. I know I would have won the one spot. I know I truly believe, unless there would have been somebody above us that would have blocked it, I truly believe I would have beat out the other Royals candidate for the spot. I don't think her video was funny, but I think had we done something like we did this year, I think it still would have won. I truly believe that. And I'm really proud of what we did, and I'm really proud of everything that happened, and Royals Nation really pulled together, and you guys fucking rock. And I don't say that ever on this show, but you really do. And I appreciate everything that everybody that follows me on Twitter and Facebook did, and that listens to the show, that all of y'all that helped me with the Fan Cave, and Dave and Clint. I mean, Clint went way out of his way to make sure that it was in their shows and what have you. And you know, I have the utmost respect for what he did. And so I just a big thank you on all that. So today's a changing of the guard, as you will, and it'll be fun, and it'll be nice to just be able to listen, and you know, I'll listen off the air, as you would say, and what have you. And so I'm excited to see the direction these guys go. You guys have heard Jeff host a little bit, and it was something new to Jeff, because every time Jeff had been able to host on either the radio show or on this, something had always gone horribly wrong. So now he'll have a chance to really step into that in a way that is much less threatening, if you will. He's done really well the last couple of shows that I haven't been on, and I'm really pleased with the direction this show's going. So that was a long diatribe, but it was everything I've been wanting to say for a while, and I haven't been on in a while. And Megan and I talked about it for a long time, and you know, she's always been kind of hard on the podcast because it takes time from us, and I respect that, because she does actually like being around me, so I should appreciate that a lot more than I do. and so she knew how hard this was for me, and it sounds silly because we don't get paid, but like Dave said on one of their shows, you know, he's lucky because he gets to talk baseball, and now he's getting to a point where he's almost to the point where he might get paid to talk baseball. And I am so jealous of David Lesky, and I make no qualms about that, and he knows that. And he's done everything that I wanted to do in Kansas City radio, and he got the right break, and that's all that it takes. And he's been very fortunate to be kind of a Royals expert on the radio, and I really appreciate that. And I had that a little bit with Three Guys in a Garage, but we never had the following of the Royals post-game show. So, but those guys are going to carry on, and they're making great connections. And, you know, I was sitting next to a Royals scout 2 days ago, and he's going to be here for 8 days. So you don't think that I haven't already asked him who he's watching, and he told me everybody, but he told me if I asked him again in 8 days that he might be able to give me a whole lot of wrong answers, he said with a laugh, because things could change a day later, or maybe they won't even take his advice because there's a lot of scouts. But he, you know, the PCL scout for the Royals is in Albuquerque right now, and I plan to talk to him, and it'll be a lot of off the record things I heard from through the grapevine, but it'll be something more than we've ever had. And we're going to be better connected now with the Royals podcast area and with me in that press box than we've ever been. And all that information is going to still be funneling down, and it's going to be awesome. So on that note, I'm done. Did you guys have anything to add?
I made some white chili last night. It's pretty good.
I bet it is. And I think Game of Thrones has started, so I'm going to get off the air and let Jeff go watch it. But Jeff...
the magic of DVR allows me to be a few minutes late, and it's okay.
Right. So, but I'm going to let you go because that was the what we were trying to do as we were trying to get there. But Jeff, thank you so much for stepping up and hosting. Mike is very good at what he does with the podcast, but he does not like to host. And Mike's very good at being Michael Engel, which is very valuable to this show. And
I would hope I'm good at that.
It's very difficult to be Michael Engel.
It is. It's very difficult to be Michael Engel.
You guys have no idea.
When we first thought about doing this show, and I always joke about it, if it wasn't for Mike rejecting me for Kings of Kaufman, this show would not exist the way it does today.
Well, here's the funny thing. Like, when we were you applied at Kings of Kaufman, and the writing wasn't the best.
And it's still not. You'll see that when my stuff for grading that the curve comes out. But I'm getting an opportunity to work on it.
You like to talk baseball, and you're good at talking baseball, and you're better at getting your ideas out by talking them out like that. And I was looking for something to add to Kings of Kaufman, so it was the perfect timing for both of us in that spot. And really, the funny thing is, I was only really kind of thinking I'd be doing like 3 or 4 shows or maybe jumping in every now and then, and then here we are, 3 years later, we're still doing
Well, and my original view of the Royal Man Report was I would have somebody different every week. I was going to get you, and I was going to get Nick from Broken Bat Single before he went insane. And... you know, whoever else I could get, Craig, and, you know, at the time, I didn't really know anybody. Brian McGannon would have definitely been somebody high on my list. A good friend of mine, Josh, was high on that list. But then Mike and I kind of made it work from the first couple of episodes, and it made sense for us to do it. He had the outlet. I had the setup for what we needed, and 3 years later, we're still here doing it. And I'm just happy that along the way we got our not baseball guy and Jeff that has stuck with us through all this and now can step into my spot and continue on being a great baseball guy, and we're going to do some great things with this show.
Absolutely. And you know, I thank you, Troy, for not only having me on and, you know, to start with, and it was because of your absence that I got on, and Mike needed somebody else to
roller derby. Yep.
Host, but then, you know, for telling me to keep coming around and that it was okay. So that was, this has always been something that I really enjoy. And, you know, same as you, you know, I'm engaged now and I'm getting married. And so, you know, obviously spending time with the fiance is important, but she also knows that this is important to me and it's something I enjoy. So, and, you know, I'm just glad that you guys, you know, were part of allowing me the opportunity to do this, and kind of, you know, the little Twitter community and social media community that we've established is freaking awesome. So
yeah, and don't get me wrong, Megan has been super supportive of me doing this, but at the same time, she's also supportive of me spending time with her. And
right.
Since I've already got a press pass for baseball, which literally right now with my situation, I'm waiting tables in the morning. I start training at the car lot in the evenings until 8 o'clock, and then I'm going to the stadium to catch the last couple innings of the game and get post-game interviews every day that they're home. And they're home 10 games at a time this season. It's like 9-game homestands every time they're home. So there's literally a week and a half where my wife doesn't see me. And once I start doing the car shop job, it's not going to be much difference because you work 10 to 12-hour days, and it's 35 minutes from our house to get there. So with drive time and everything, you know, there's just not a lot of hours left in the day. And I'm grateful that you guys have enough time to do this because – and, I mean, I'm sure there's times that Jeff and Mike won't line up and Mike will have a different person in to fill in the spot. And that was a great thing about it always being three was there was always – a way to get two of us on unless there wasn't. And then, but because there was three, we didn't have to take 6 months off like Clint and Dave did when Clint was dealing with all of his stupid legal troubles with the city of Omaha, which I love Nebraska, but Omaha sucks. the only good thing about Omaha is the Storm Chasers, and they're actually in Papillion now. So I don't know that there's anything good about Omaha. And so, you know, those guys actually had to take a break, and we didn't. So we've been very fortunate in that aspect, and we may have to take a few more weeks off now than we did before. But if we do, we do. But thank you all for being part of the show. And please email us at KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com. Email your thoughts. We always try to read the emails. I don't read as much of Jack's emails as I used to, and I really should. But Jack is still a big contributor to the email, and we get some stuff from David Lowe and some of the other regulars. And I just haven't pulled anything out. It hasn't, you know, a lot happens in baseball, especially during the season. It's a lot harder to pull the stuff out if you email me, and 3 days later the whole thing has changed. So. But I do try my best, and if you send us an email, I'll do my best to read it on the air. So for Michael Engel and your new host, Jeff Herr, I'm Troy Olson, and take care of yourselves. One final time, go Royals. So, okay. Either you can send me it, Mike, or you can edit it. I don't care.
All right. I'm going to try to do my taxes tonight. So
okay.
I may send it to you. Right, I know.
That's a good idea, Mike.
The accountant on the other end just died.
Right. I swear I did these 3 years ago, though, so I don't know why I got to do them again.
Mine would already be done if Megan could get a hold of one of the people that owes her a W-2. She can't get a hold. One of her former employers won't send us the information. And so really? I have a lady that's doing my taxes as a wedding present, and she's like, I just need this last W-2, and I can send it in. Hmm. So we haven't even been able to send ours in because of other people.
That's frustrating.
Very frustrating. So we work on that again tomorrow.
Yay.
But anyways, Jeff, go watch the show. Mike, do whatever you're going to do, and then I'll talk to you guys later.
All right.
All right, bye.
See you later.
Coolest.